We are holding on the Ches on the Beis by the first Mishnah, so just past the middle of the Amud.
Ches on the Beis by the first
Mishnah? Lamed Ches on the Beis, the first Mishnah.
Lamed Ches.
Okay, so we talked about before, we've been talking this whole time about a kira, about a stove, where you did go to Fakatum, you didn't do go to Fakatum, and now you're putting food on it, you're returning food to it, or whatever. Kira, we explained at the beginning, is shaped like a rectangular box. If you don't mind saying that mute, please. Kira is shaped like a rectangular box. It's longer in one dimension than the other, and along the longer dimension, you have two holes at the top of it, where you can put pots on top of the holes or inside the holes, and underneath you have a place of an air where you would put the firewood or whatever. So now what we said is, so we have the various dinim about a kira, where again, if you use straw to fire it, then you don't have all these issues of goros for kotum, because straw is fairly insubstantial, so there's not really much left in the way of poles. Only if you use gefes, which is sesame seed pulp or olive pulp or whatever, or wood, only then do you have the various dinim that we were talking about that needs to be goros for kotum, or what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do when it's goros for kotum. But now in our Mishnah, we're going to talk about two other kinds of cooking utensils, cooking implements. One is an oven and one is a kupach. An oven is narrower on top than on bottom. So as we talked about the other day, the point is because of that, because it only has a much narrower hole on top. We're holding on to the on the bay by the Mishnah. So we have, again, so there's a tamer. So we have a tanur, an oven, which is narrower on top and wider on the bottom. So because of that, it retains heat much more than a kira does, and therefore it has different dinim, as we're going to say in the Mishnah. And then you also have something called a kupach, which is similar to a kira in that it's the same width on top and on bottom, but the difference is that a kira is rectangular and it has room for two pots, whereas a kupach is square and it has room for only one pot. So a kupach, therefore, is sort of halfway between a kira and a tamer. On the one hand, it retains heat much better than a kupach does because it's square, not rectangular. On the other hand, it doesn't retain heat as much as a tamer does because it's the same width on top and on bottom. So we're going to deal with those issues. So the Mishnah says, tanu shisi kuhu l'pashu l'gvava. If you have an oven, where again, remember, an oven is narrower on top, if you fired it, even using straw or stubble, lo yitzin ben yitoychoi ben ma'agava, you're still not allowed to put a keli on top of inside it, or algaba. Now, on the surface, mitoychoi means inside it, in other words, down on the floor of it, on the cold, and algaba would be on top of it, on top of the hole on top. We'll see in the Gemara a bit of a different meaning that it had. Anyway, so the point is, in other words, had it been a kira, that would be perfectly allowed, even though you didn't do goruf for kotum. Yaakov, for your benefit, you haven't been here the last couple of days. Goruf for kotum is either you sweep out the coal, or before Shabbos, or you cover them with ashes. And nowadays, you put a blech on it, which is functionally the equivalent of putting ashes on. Either way, then you have dinim. Then you're allowed to use that stove for leaving things on it before Shabbos, or for returning things there for returning a hot pot of food to it on Shabbos. But so we said that in the case of a kira, if you use straw, then you don't need any of that in the first place because straw is so insubstantial that you're not really going to have any coals left that we're worried about, that the humming should have to be worried about. You're going to stir up the coals. But in the case of a tanner, because it retains its heat much more, therefore we're always concerned that you're going to stir up whatever coals there might be over there. So certainly all the more so if you use gefes or wood, but even if you use kashel grover, straw or stubble, you're still not allowed to do shahir, you're still not allowed to leave a pot onto the stove. You have, by the way, some Kohen and talk about the question. Maybe if it's Goros or Kotum and you use straw and stubble, maybe you would be allowed to. Okay, whatever. On the surface, the Mishnah is saying you can't do anything at all with a tackle. Continues the Mishnah. Kupach, she's the cool of a cash of a grower. What about now when it comes to a kupach, which again is one of these one-hole stoves? It's square, unlike a keto, which is rectangular. Then she's the cool of a cash of a grower. If you fire it using straw or stubble, how is it a kirayim? Then it has the same din as the kirayim, as the kira that we learned about in the first Mishnah of our, in the first Mishnah and the Gemara about it, that wherever you, that in other words, it doesn't need to be Goros for Kotum, in order to put a pot on top of it. The Gephis of Eitzim, but if you use Gephis or wood, Harehu Katanur, then it's like an oven, and then you can't do, and then you can't do any shitty on it. Because again, the point is that the Kopach has more heat than the Kirayim because it's square, but less than the Tanur, because it's the same width on top and on bottom, unlike Tanur, which is wider on bottom and narrower on top, and therefore we have that kind of hybrid gain about it. When it comes to this whole Mishnah, of course, you know, you have the same issue as we had on the first Mishnah of the Perek. Are we primarily talking about over here about Shehiyah, or are we talking about leaving the pot on there, or are we primarily talking about about chazara, about putting the food back there after you took it away. In fact, Tosfos says that if we say that the first Mishnah was talking about lahachzir, meaning that the rules for shehiyah are more lenient, which is like Hananiah says, and again, as we've been learning the last couple of days, you have many Rishonim, including Rashi and Tosfos, who hold that halacha is like him, then it would mean actually that you are allowed to do shehiyah many times on an oven, even if it's not goros for kotum, and only in order to do chazara would you have the issues that we're saying in our Mishnah. Okay. We talked about the other day that our ovens nowadays, because they open from the side, therefore they don't retain as much heat as the ovens of their time that had only a narrow opening on the top, and therefore the post can say that our ovens nowadays count like the kira of the times of the Mishnah. So that the rules of the first Mishnah of our parent apply to it rather than the rules of this Mishnah. Okay. So we spoke about that, which is that again, within that you have the question, is the halacha like Hananiah or not? So the end result is, if we say the halacha is not like Hananiah, which is what the Rif and the Rambam say, it would mean that in order to leave a pot in our present day ovens, you would need, in order to leave food of any kind, a pan of food or whatever, in our present day ovens, it would have to be goruf for kotur, meaning in the case of an oven, you'd have to have an oven insert in there in order to be able to do that, and all the more so in order to do chazara, in order to put the food back. If we say the halacha is like Hananiah, which is how we Ashkenazim follow, then you would be allowed, then you don't need an oven insert in order to leave food in there. Shehiyah, you're allowed, even if it's not goro for kotum, even if you haven't done anything in particular to the fire, you haven't put an insert or anything like that. It would have to be cooked to Michael Bender's story before Shabbos in order for you to do that. And therefore, only when it comes to chazara, only when it comes to putting the pot back in, then you would have to have goro for kotum in order to be allowed to do that.
But today we don't use ovens on Shabbos, even to keep the food warm.
Actually, we do. In my house, for example, we put the oven on. Many ovens nowadays have a Shabbos mode. You put them on before Shabbos, and then many electric ovens, at least, I don't know about gas ovens, have a Shabbos mode. You put them on before Shabbos. You leave them to stay on, and you put food in there. And that way, when you take it out of the oven Friday night to eat, then it's still hot. Now, that's according to the opinion that Shehiyah is allowed without Goros for Kotum, which would be according to the opinion of Hananiah, which in turn would be according to the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos. If we want to put the food back in there afterwards, then we couldn't do that unless we had an oven insert in there.
Right, but most people don't use ovens. They use stoves. And in a stove case, which is open on all sides, what is the halacha? Why then do you need a blech if it's not an oven?
That's the thing. If we say that the halacha is like Hananya, then you don't need a blech for Shehiyah, you only need for Chazara. If you say the halacha is not like Hananya, then you need a blech for Shehiyah. So we are noyig to use a blech, and that helps as far that helps as the equivalent of kotzer, the equivalent of covering the ashes, of covering the coals with ashes. Therefore, now we're allowed to do Shehiyah and Chazara. Therefore, we're allowed to do Shehiyah on it according to everybody, even according to the Rif and the Rambam, and we're allows you Chazar on it. That's the gist of why we use the black.
Well, that's for a stove. But for an oven, you cannot use a black.
No, but instead, that's what I'm talking about, an insert. If you wanted to be able to put food back in an oven, or according to the Rif and the Rush, if you wanted to keep a food in there warm to begin with on Shabbos, you would need to have the equivalent of a blech for an oven, which would be an oven insert, a metal thing that goes into the oven and covers it on all sides like a blech does for a stove.
A metal box, so to speak.
Yeah, a metal box. Yeah, some people use similar things for Pesach if they have an oven that can't be captured for whatever reason. Okay, let's start over here. So the Gemara says, "Can Rishisiku?" We're talking about an oven that you fired, and we're saying that you still can't put food mitochai or me'algava. So what do those words mean? Someone of Yosef Lamehmer, of Yosef thought to say, Tochei Tochei Mamish, the word Tochei is literally inside the oven. In other words, the Mishnah is telling us you can't take a pot of food and lower it down through the hole in the top of the oven to sit on the coals inside the oven, or even if there's no coals, even if you swept them out again. And Al-Gabav means Al-Gabav Mamish, and the word Al-Gabav would mean literally on top of the oven, meaning on top of it, literally. In other words, again, right above the hole on top. But the Yosef thought to say that the Mishnah is implying that, we talked about a few days ago, another thing, which is called smicha, which is where you want to put a pot of food next to a hot stove and have it absorb some of the heat that way, through the side. So the Yosef thought to say that our Mishnah is not allowing you to do shehiyah with an oven, fine, whether inside the oven or whether on top of it, but smicha, to put a pot of food next to the oven, shaper dummy, would be perfectly fine. In other words, the idea is, Rabbi Yosef thought to say, we learned previously that you're allowed to do that with a kira, even if the kira was not goreh for kotum. So Rabbi Yosef thought the same thing should apply to an oven. But Abaya says, I have a contradiction. Look at the next part of our mission. We said if you have a kupach, this one burner stove, which the one whole stove, which you fired with straw or stubble, harehu kakirai, and then it's like kira, and you're allowed to do shehiyah on it on Shabbos. But the gefes of the eisim harehu katanu, but if you use gefes or wood, then it's like an oven, and it's also to do shehiyah on it. So now we have to figure out, when you say that it's like an oven, in what sense? That harehu katanu of the osur, and we say it's osur, implying ha kakira shari, implying that we're talking about a situation where had it been like a kira, it would have been allowed. In other words, we're talking about something where you have a situation where doing a certain thing with a kira is allowed, but doing the same thing with a tanner is not allowed. So what is that? Ulamai, what case are we talking about? Are we talking about where you did not do this goreh for kotum, you didn't remove the coal, you didn't cover them with ashes before Shabbos? Well, obviously, elakira tiyene grupo k'toma al-gaba mishari. With kira also, then you wouldn't be allowed to keep food on top of it. The whole discussion that we've been having the last couple of blocks in the Gemara is that at least if we say not according to Hananya, then in order to do shehiyah on a two-hole stove, you need to do goreh for kotum. Obviously, therefore, our Mishnah must be talking about putting a pot next to the stove, which we said before that if the stove was not goreh for kotum, then that is still allowed. Now the point is, Tosfos explains that Abaya, it figures that our Mishnah has to be talking about an oven or a stove that's not goreh for kotum, because if goreh for kotum, there really shouldn't be a difference what kind of fuel you use. the fact that the Mishnah is making a distinction between straw on the one hand and gefes and wood on the other hand seems to imply that we're talking about, in both cases, we're talking about it's not goreh for kutum. So therefore, if the Mishnah says that a kupach, again, the one whole stove, if it's not goreh, if by implication it's not goreh for kutum, and we're saying it's like an oven, then in other words, it means that we're talking about the kind of thing, why are we saying it's like an oven? Why isn't it enough to say that it's like a stove? Because a stove, there would be something you could do with it in this case. Namely, you could put a pot next to it. But the fact that we're saying it's like an oven implies that an oven has a further chumrah, and you can't even put a pot next to it. So el alav lishma, evidently we must be talking about doing smicha, putting the pot next to it. V'katani habeir katanu v'alser, and still the Mishnah is saying that the kupach, when it was fired with gefes or wood, is like a tanner, is like an oven. Therefore, it's also to do anything with it. Anything meaning even to do smicha. So you, Rav Yosef, are saying that you're allowed to do smicha in this case. Evidently not. Evidently, therefore, when the Mishnah says toichai and al gabav, toichai would be any place where it's on or in the oven. Al gabav would be next to the oven. So
why is it them al gabav then if it's next to the oven?
Because
is not al gabav.
The same way, for example, in the case when we say klei cheres, when we talk about klei cheres, how they become tomei, we use the expression that they can become tomei, that they can't become tomei, rather, mi gaboi from the outside, and there we don't mean, gaboi doesn't mean necessarily on top of the table, it just means any place on the outer surface. So the same thing, Abaya can understand over here that al-gabav means any place on the outer surface of the oven, including next to it. So Omer of Adaba Abba, however, Rav Adaba Abba says not necessarily, because you're assuming, Abaya, that our Gemara, that our Mishnah is talking about where the oven or the kupach will not go to Fakatum, where you did not prepare the fire before Shabbos, and therefore you're saying the Mishnah is implying that even then an oven has a chumrah over a kira. Not necessarily. We actually could be talking about a kupach or an oven that are goreh for kutum, and therefore the Mishnah is not at all addressing the question of smicha. The Mishnah is just addressing the question of shehiya on top of the oven or inside the oven. And when we say harehu katanur, when we say that a kupach is in certain cases like an oven, means that afagav the goreh for kutum. What we say is that just like with an oven, even if it's goreh for kutum, it would still be also to put a pot on top of it to do shahia for it on Shabbos, because again, the idea is that an oven, because it retains its heat so much, even if you swept out the cold, or even if you covered it with ashes, the Chachamim are concerned that you're going to try to stir up whatever few coals are left, because even if you sieve out the coals, inevitably you don't get all of them. There's inevitably a few left here and there. But now that we're coming about concerning, you might try to stir them up, because unlike with a kira, where you're going to figure it's a waste of time, whatever heat you get out of them is right away going to go out through the big hole on the top, through two big holes on the top, rather. With a tanu, you're more likely to say, you know what, I do have something to gain out of it. And I'll stir them up. It'll make a little extra heat, and because it's a tanner, it'll preserve the heat much more. So therefore, we say that even if an oven is goreh for kutum, you're still not allowed to put a pot on top of it. So therefore, all the Mishnah is telling us is that the same thing would apply. The same thing would apply to a kupach if you use gefes or wood to heat it up. Because the each kira had the din of the kupach been like a kira, ki grufo ktubash uktuma shakur nami, then it would have been fine if it goreh for kutum. So in other words, you, Abaya, are assuming that our Mishnah is talking about not goreh for kutum, and therefore you're saying that therefore the only thing it can be referring to is smicha. It could be talking actually about it is goreh for kutum, and the Mishnah is actually talking about can you do shihiyah or can you do chazara, according to the different understandings of the first and the second Mishnahs. So it comes out, you know, with basically that Rav Adaba Abba is in a certain way machmir on Abaya and in a certain way makel. According to Abaya, if it's goreh for kotum, there'd be no problem. Rav Adaba Ava is saying that no, there'd still be a problem. You still can't do shahiyah. You still can't do shahiyah on an oven or a kuppah. On the other hand, if it's not goreh for kotum, Abaya would say everything is osur, even smicha. Rav Adaba Ava would be saying you'd be allowed to do smicha.
On the basis of what?
On the basis of, that's how Rav Adaba Ava is explaining the Mishnah, that our Mishnah is talking about it is goreh for kotum. Therefore, the implication is that we're saying that a kuppah, fine, it's like an oven in that you can't do shahiyah, but the implication is that smicha is allowed, and that would be the case actually whether it is goreh for kotum or not when we talk about a kuppah, when we talk about a one-hole stove. When it comes to an oven, also you have the same machlokes. But Abaya would say that also Rav Adaba Ava would say that you're allowed to. And Rav Adaba Ava basically is saying similar to what Rav Yosef said before, to how Rav Yosef wanted to understand the Mishnah that you're allowed to do smicha. So Rav Adaba Ava is saying that is in fact what the Mishnah means, not like Abaya said.
What does the word smicha mean again? Hiding it?
Smicha means putting a pot on the ground next to the stove or next to the oven so it absorbs some heat through the wall of the oven.
Okay. It's called conduction in physics, and the other type is called convection. The heat transfers through the air. Instead here, smicha conducts directly through the one tanner to another.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's the thing. So we have a machloshes. We have a Abaya understands the Mishnah one that when we're talking about a kuppah and also a tanur, Abaya would understand that when it comes to a tanur, everything is also even smicha. The only thing that's mutter according to him is with a kuppah if you did goreh for kotum or if you used straw in the first place, as the Mishnah says, because then it's like a kera. Rabbi Adama Abba and Rabbi Yosef would say that if it's not goreh for kotum, you can't do anything but accept smicha. If it is goreh for kotum, rather, still you can't do anything. It would be just like an oven when the Mishnah is saying that you can't do anything with an oven. Smicha, you would be allowed. But if you didn't do goreh for kotum, and if you didn't do goreh for kotum, then the same thing. So he's makel against the Abaya in one way and machmer against him in the other way. So the Gemara is going to bring a proof to Abaya's understanding of the matter of smicha. The Gemara says, Tanya Kavah said to Abaya, we learn a braisa like what Abaya says. Tanur sheisi kul bakasha with rava, an oven that was fired with straw or stubble, ein sonchen loy, you can't do smicha to it. The ein sorach loymer agabav, needless to say, you can't put a pot on top of it. The ein sorach loymer sonchen, and even more needless to say that you can't put a pot inside it, so none of them would be allowed, which is what Abaya was saying, that smicha would be also in such a case. But kuppah shi'isi kul b'kasha l'rava. But if you have a kuppah, the one-hole stove, where you fired it with kasha l'rava, something like, then you are allowed to do smicha. You are allowed to do, as you said, conductive heat by putting the pot next to it. The ein nosin al-dava, but you can't put a pot on top of it, because the Gerot changes actually to the noisman of Dabba, that you are allowed to put a pot on top of it. So because we said it's like a kira, and a kira, you'd be allowed to do that if you use straw for it. The gefes of the asim, but if you use gefes or wood, then you would not be allowed to do smicha, which again is what Abaya, had said, if it's not goreh for kotum. Okay. So that's that. So in other words, we've shown that at least when it comes to the din of smicha, that we follow that we have to accept the Abaya's explanation rather than Rav Yosef's or Rav Adaba Abba's, which is therefore that smicha with an oven is never allowed, and smicha if it's not goreh for kotum with a kuppah is also not allowed. But if it's goreh for kotum, then it's allowed. Actually, the Rambam paskins based on his understanding of the sugya over here. that actually even that with a kupa, even if it is goro for kotum, you still wouldn't be allowed to put a pot next to it, even though on the surface the Gemara is saying over here that a buyer would allow it. Now, let's figure out what a kupa is. Now, all this time we've been explaining what a kupach is, but we have to actually ask, let's figure out with a question and answer style like the Gemara does. Hi, kupach hechidami. What is the story with this kupach? Ik tiradami, if we consider it like a tira, if it has the same, if it retains the same amount of heat as a tira, then after you look at Jefferson, the eitanami, then it should be more to, even if you use Jefferson word, when we say, to the extent that we say that Shahiyah is allowed, and according to Chananya, or that we say that if you go to a kotum, you should be allowed to do Shahiyah according to everybody, and if you're considering the kupach to have, to retain as much heat as an oven, after the bakash of a glover, then it should be the same din as an oven, even if you use straw or stubble. Why does the kupach have this hybrid din that we're talking about? On the lay, so Rav Ashi explains to him, Nafish Havlin Midikira, the Zutar Havlin Miditamo. What it is the Kupach is in between, therefore it has an in between din. It retains more heat than a Kira because it only has one, because it's square and it only has one hole. The Zutar Havlin Miditamo, but the heat of it, the heat that it retains, is less than the heat of an oven because, again, an oven is wider on bottom and narrower on top, whereas a Kupach is the same. Is the same width on bottom and on top. Therefore, it has a hybrid status as far as how much heat it retains. And therefore, la halacha it has a hybrid status as far as what the digits are with it. Okay, what is the actual, what do they actually look like? A kupach has enough room on it to put one pot. It has one hole in it. Kira, as opposed to a kira, has room for two. So therefore, again, because the kira is longer and it has two holes, therefore it loses its heat much faster than a kupach does. Omer Abaya the Tamer of Yirmiyah, Abaya says, or some say of Yirmiyah says, Afanan Nami Tanena. As a matter of fact, we can prove that from a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, that we can see from the way the Mishnah describes a Kira and a Kupach, that is the definition, that a Kira has two holes and a Kupach has only one, because in the Mishnah there it says, Kira Shenechlach Al-Orka, if you have a Kira that was broken in half along the length, Tehoda, then it's no longer Makabel Tuma, because once it was broken in half along the length, you don't have, it's not functional anymore, because now both holes, when we say along the length, means that now each hole has been split in half. So now you can't use it to put pots on anymore, because each hole is broken and is only a half circle now. So you can't use it anymore. The Rafa, but if it was divided width-wise, so you have the part with one hole was broken from the part with the other hole, then it's tmeya, it's still makabel tuma, because each part that has the one hole is still functional. Okay, so now you have, let's say that now you have each one, when you try to use it, it's missing a wall on one side, because before they were attached together, and now they're not. Fine, but that's not enough to make it that it's not makabel tuma anymore, because it's still a functional oven, it's still a functional stove, you could still use it. But the Mishnah says kupach bein la'orka bein la'roch b'tar. But a kupach, whether it was broken lengthwise or widthwise, is not makabel tuma. And that shows that a kupach only has one hole, and therefore, no matter which way it was broken, whether widthwise or lengthwise, either way, that hole is now a semicircle, and you can't use it anymore to put a pot on top of. So that shows the difference between a kira and a kupach.
A kupach is square, right?
A kupach is square and it has one hole. That's the point. The point is not so much that it's square. The point is that it is, although that is true, the point is that it has only one hole as opposed to a kirayim has two holes. Okay.
But once they're broken in half, they should be both have the same din because they're losing.
No. Again, because a kira, you could conceivably have. Imagine, put in front of yourself two round things. If you now have, if it's broken between those two, each one by itself is still round and it's still functional.
If it has another wall, but it doesn't, you're saying.
Doesn't matter. The fact that it's missing one wall still has all the rest of the wall. Okay, so it's missing one wall. That still doesn't prevent you from building a fire at the bottom of it and cooking a pot on the top. Okay, it means more heat will escape than it otherwise would. Maybe a pot will take longer to cook than it would otherwise, but it's still functional. As opposed to a kira.
But you cannot say it's functional like a kira. The heat goes away through the wall.
It's not as functional, but it's still functional enough that it's still makabel tumah, as opposed to if the actual hole was broken through and now you only have half the hole, then it's not makabel tumah anymore because then there's no way that you can put a pot on top of it anymore. Okay. All right. The next Mishnah is going to be dealing with matters involving cooking on Shabbos, which therefore continues from the topic that we were talking about Shehiya and Chazara, which also involves something related to cooking on Shabbos. But here we're going to be talking about things where a person is not cooking directly with fire, but rather with either what's called Tolda Sa'esh, which is something that was heated from the fire and then he cooks using that, or you're also going to be talking about where a person cooks using other sources of heat, for example, with solar heat. So the Mishnah starts off. You're not allowed to, on Shabbos, put an egg next to a kettle full of water, even if the kettle is off the fire. So therefore, the kettle now would be considered toldei sa'esh. It's not the fire itself. You're not cooking the egg directly with the heat of the original fire that the kettle was on. The kettle is hot from the fire, and now you're trying to cook the egg by conduction, as you said, touching the outside of the kettle. You can't do that on Shabbos. Even you're doing it b'shvil shetisgalgal. You're doing it in order to get the egg even only soft boiled. You're only trying to get it cooked enough that it will roll. If you ever try, by the way, when you were setting up your seder, for example, you sometimes have to be able to tell you're going to put a base on there. You're going to put an egg. You need to be able to tell sometimes whether the egg is raw or not. A good way to do that is try spinning it. If it doesn't spin, it means it's raw. If it spins, it means it's cooked, because then the contents inside it are solid enough to stay together. So here, chichisgalgo means you cook an egg long enough for it to be able to spin around. Anyway, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, because again, you're not allowed to cook with toldei sa'ur. Not only you're not allowed to cook directly on the fire, but even with toldei sa'ur, even with something that was heated from the fire and now you're trying to use it to heat up the egg. So you can't do that. The lo yafti'ena b'sudarin, also you're not allowed to break the egg onto cloth that was heated up. So you took a cloth, and here Rashi explains that you're talking about the cloth was actually heated up in the sun. So you left the cloth out in the sun for a little while until it became very hot, and now you're going to break an egg onto that cloth with the idea that now as the contents of the egg touch the hot cloth, then it'll get cooked. It'll get at least soft boiled. You're not allowed to do that. That's called using Tobit HaHamah, and the Tanakama is saying that you're not allowed to do that. Rav Yossi would say that's allowed, because Rav Yossi would say that you're allowed to use Tobit HaHamah. Rav Yossi would say you're even allowed to use the sun itself directly, as we'll see in the Gemara. The lo yatminena b'choil, you're also not allowed to bury the egg in sand, over avak jachim, or with the in dust on the roads, which again became hot from the sun, the shvil shetitzala, in order that the egg should be roasted. That you're not allowed to do, and it seems, now on the surface, it seems Rav Yossi agrees with that also, because Rav Yossi is not disagreeing in the Mishnah. So we'll see in the Gemara why he doesn't disagree. If he just said that you're allowed to use toldei sa'amah, and this sand, or this dust, became hot from the sun beating down on it, why shouldn't you be able to, the same way as you said that you're allowed to break the egg into cloth? So we'll see in the Gemara. So the Gemara tells a story, which we're going to see in the Gemara, how the story relates to what we just talked about. Maisa sha'osu anshei Tveria. It happened once that the people of Tveria came up with an idea. Now, in Tveria, they have the famous hot springs of Tveria. So what they did is they built, sometime during the week, they built a siloin, which is a pipe that conducted shofonim, that conducted cold water, looks like ama shochamin into a stream of hot water from the hot springs of Tiberia. Now here you have Rashi learns that what it means is that they want to have at the cold water, the way the Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying that they wanted the cold water to mix with the hot water, and then they could use the mix. Then they could use the mixed water to bathe it, to drink or to bathe in on Shabbat. So they figured, the people of Tiberia, we're not talking, these weren't Amei Aref, these were Talmid HaChamim, but they figured, listen, you know, we learned in the first parak that the halacha is like this, well, you're allowed to start a malacha before Shabbos and have it continue on Shabbos. So they figured the same kind of thing. You have the water is going in and mixing with the hot water on Shabbos and getting heated up. They figured there's no problem with it because after all, it's not Tolda Sahur. It's not something the hot springs of Tiberia are not heated up by fire. So therefore they figure it's allowed. Tosfos and Maran don't like that explanation because first of all, the Gemara is going to compare it to Hatsmana. The Gemara is going to compare it to insulating a pot of food before Shabbos to keep it warm. If you have the hot water and the cold water mixing together, you can't really call that Hatsmana. That would be a different matter. Also, Tosfos points out, practically speaking, the hot springs of Tiberia, they smell bad because they have sulfur and whatever dissolved in the water, so you wouldn't bathe directly in that water. So therefore, Tosfos has a different explanation, which is that what the people of Tiberia did, their pipe, it ran through the chametz area, but not touching them. In other words, they had a pipe that's open on both ends, but both ends are outside the chametz area. They have cold water is running through the pipe. The pipe passes through the chametz area, through the hot springs, and the water in it gets heated up, and then it comes out the other. Then you have clean water coming out. Then you have clean water, which was heated up, coming out the other end. On Rulahem Chachamim, so the Chachamim said to the people of Tiberia, that's no good. In the Shabbos, if we're talking about on Shabbos, if cold water is coming in on Shabbos, Kechamim Shehuchamu B'Shabbos, then that water has the din of water that was heated up on Shabbos, V'asudin B'Rechitil B'Shtia, and therefore you'd be also to use it to wash yourself with or to drink. The Im B'Yomtiv, and if you're talking about that water goes through this pipe on Yomtiv, Kechamin Shehuch Mubi Yomtiv, then it would have the din of water that was heated up on Yomtiv, Ba'asurin Berchitza, so you'd still be also to wash with it, but you'd be allowed to drink it. Now again, the point is that the Chametz Veria are not, on the face of it, the Chametz Veria are not told it to Ur, they're not heated by a fire. They're heated by other processes, and still the Chachamim are answering it. So we'll analyze, and then tomorrow we'll see what exactly the people of Tiberia thought and what the Chachamim are answering them. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Okay, now we said in the Mishnah that a person is not allowed to take a kettle of water that came off the stove and is still hot and put an egg next to it in order to start cooking the egg in its shell. And said you're not allowed to do that. So the question is, if you do that, Gilgomai, what would be the din? Is he over on Bishul Minatora or not? There's two different ways of explaining the question. One is, do we say it's only a little amount of cooking? I mean, the egg is not going to get completely, it's not going to get completely boiled from that kind of thing, from just touching a hot kettle of water. So maybe such a little amount of cooking wouldn't be considered Bishul Minatora. That's one way of understanding the question. The other way of understanding this that you're using, Tolda Sa'ur, that you're using not the actual fire itself, but rather something that was heated from the fire and using that to cook something else, is that also Daraisa or is it only also Darabam? So Rabbi Yosef says, as a matter of fact, yes. If he did that, he would actually be Chayav HaChatas. In other words, it is completely also Daraisa, according to either explanation. According to the first explanation, that even though it was only a little amount of cooking, usually cooking on Shabbos requires that it reaches at least to Maichel Ben Rasoi, one-third or one-half cooked. But eggs, you are able to eat eggs even when they're raw, actually. So therefore, even if it was only cooked a little bit, then it's already enough to be mechayev him. Or according to the second explanation, it means that even if he used toldos or ur, he's still chayev daralayis. Omer ma'abrei d'Ravina. So ma'abrei d'Ravina says, I can prove that. Apanan nami tamena. In fact, we can prove that that din is correct based on a din that we have in a Mishnah much later in Omer section, in the 22nd parak. The Mishnah says, Kol shebo b'chamin melitnei haShabbos. Any kind of, now you have, let's say, for example, salted food. You have food that was very heavily salted, and because of that, you can't eat it as is. So what you do is you soak it, or you rinse it in hot water in order to get out the salt, and then you eat it. So the Mishnah says over there that if it was put into hot water before Shabbos, shorin osa b'chamin b'Shabbos, now you're allowed to soak it in hot water again on Shabbos, because here we get into the concept called ein bishul acha bishul, which is that once it was cooked before Shabbos, then it's not possible to be cooking it again on Shabbos. Tosfos over here discusses that it would only work, that would only work if it was completely cooked before Shabbos. It wouldn't work if it was, for example, only Michael Bender's day.
And what about this? We learned yesterday about cooking it, doing it yafalav, if it cooks more, it gets better.
That's mistana for yafalav. Okay, but over here, the idea is that you're not actually, it's not, I mean, here we're not talking about direct cooking. Here we're just talking about soaking it in hot water. So therefore, there it's a little more lenient. So you're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos, because you're not directly cooking it on the fire, you're just soaking it in hot water. If it was not put in hot water before Shabbos, you're still allowed to rinse it with hot water on Shabbos, meaning just to pour hot water over it, that you would be allowed to do. And here you have actually a bit of an issue. Are we talking about that you're allowed to use a kli rishon for that purpose, or only a kli sheni? Because the water in a kli sheni is not hot enough to cook. So you have here's where we get to the matter of eerie kli sheni, where you're pouring something from a kli sheni, that in some cases it's allowed, although then in halacha it says that Amos and Sal and Shulchan Aruch, now that I would read it, that you have certain kinds of things, you have certain kinds of food that are kalei habishul, the Mishnah is now going to mention an example of certain kinds of foods which even pouring on them hot water is enough to cook them. Now we don't know among the various foods that we have what are kalei habishul or not. Therefore, in many cases, you're not allowed to pour on them from a kli sheni. So this is where we get into, you know, when people who make themselves tea or coffee on Shabbos, and you have the whole issue of how you pour the hot water on the tea bag or on the coffee ground. This Mishnah and this Gemara over here is one of the sources that comes to bear on that. Are you allowed to pour on it from a cliche, or do we say that tea or coffee are one of those things that are kalei habishul? They cook very easily, even if you pour on them from a cliche, and therefore you would only be allowed to pour on them from a cliche. And then you have this is why some people even go further and they prepare tea essence before Shabbos, and that way you have even less of an issue because water is not one of the things that's considered to be that water is not one of the things that's kalei habishul. It's not one of the things that heats up so easily from a kli sheni. Therefore that would be allowed.
Anyway, so according to that explanation, you're saying kalei habishul comes. Considered bishul, even achar bishul.
We're talking about things that were not themselves cooked yet.
Tea was cooked. Tea bags. It's not raw tea. It has been cooked already.
It hasn't really been cooked. And besides, when we say ein bishul acha bishul, primarily what we're talking about is if beforehand it was solid and now it remains solid, or before it was liquid and now it remains liquid, that's when we talk about ein bishul acha bishul. But for example, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Hilchos Beis Shabbos, which you can find in the facts of Urim, that, and also in the back of Shulchan Aruch, that, for example, let's say if you're heating up chicken on Shabbos and you have and you have fat over there, which was congealed, starts melting, then you do say, yes, shvishal, achavishal. So the same thing, even if you're going to say that tea leaves are considered to be cooked before Shabbos, but the fact that they dissolve in the tea would still mean there is shvishal, achavishal. So then you have the question. So again, you have, there are Rishonim who learn that you're allowed to pour from a Kli Rishon. That Tosfos discusses over here, the pros and cons of it. One way of looking at it is that you are allowed to pour from a Kli Rishon. One way of looking at it is you're not. You're only allowed to pour from a Kli Sheni. But then the Ramah points out, based on what we're saying over here, based on what we're quoting over here in the Gemara from the Mishnah, that you have certain things that are Kalei Bishul, that cook very easily, and those things you couldn't even pour from a Kli Sheni, and because, in general, we're not sure most of the time what's Kalei, a Bishul or not. Therefore, in general, we're not allowed to pour from a Kli Sheni onto food, unless the food was previously liquid, and now is liquid, for example, with Kli essence. Okay, anyway, the Mishnah continues.
So let's say cocoa or coffee, you know, Kli Sheni doesn't work also?
So that's the thing. If you're going to pour hot water from a Kli Sheni over tea, over coffee or over cocoa or whatever, it might be an issue. Because before it was a solid and now you're turning it into a liquid, and then we would say yes, bishul achavishul, even if you say it was cooked beforehand. So that's why you have either people are careful to do it from a Kli Shlishi. So they pour the water into a third keli, and then they pour that over the tea or coffee, and then there's much less of an issue. Or in the case of tea, people prepare tea scents before Shabbos. I don't know if people do that with cocoa or coffee, but the same idea. You could prepare a very concentrated solution of it before Shabbos, and then on Shabbos you just pour in hot water from a Kli Sheni, and then you'd be good.
But if you're saying that Bishul Achar Bishul is to convert a solid into a liquid, it doesn't really matter how many kelim you use. It's always
no, it does. Once you have some Kli Shlishi already, then there's more reason to be makel. A Kli Shlishi, there's less reason to say that Kli Shlishi.
Why is that? You're still converting a solid into a liquid.
Because the fact that it's not just converting a solid into a liquid, it's how hot the water is, and by the time the water is poured into a Kli Shlishi, already the temperature of it has gone down of necessity because you're pouring it into a cold keli, and therefore it's getting more and more cooled off.
Okay. Yeah, but if it still converts, let's say, cocoa, you convert it to a liquid.
You're not listening. The point is not just converting a solid to a liquid. The point is when you're doing it using heat, when you're using it something that's considered bishul and halacha.
That's my question.
Pouring from a Kli Rishon is considered cooking, according to most people. Pouring from a Kli Sheni may be if the thing is Kali Bishul. Kli Shlishi is not. Therefore,
so that's my question.
There's your answer. Kli Shlishi, there's no problem.
One second. The Kli Shlishi, it still converts even cold a solid into a liquid.
But that doesn't matter. You're focusing on the solid to liquid thing. You're not focusing on whether it's considered bishul. If it's from a Kli Shlishi, it's not considered bishul. Then there's no problem. Think about it. If you were to pour cold water over cocoa, for example, you're also making it into a liquid, but there's no problem with that on Shabbat.
So okay, one second.
Abraham Moshe.
One second. If you put cocoa into a cold liquid,
Abraham Moshe Alexander.
I'd like to ask a question.
But you've been asking the question for a while now. I get the point, but let's discuss it later because we want to go on.
I won't get to the point later. There's no point in getting to the point later. If you put cocoa into a cold liquid, and then you put a Kli Sheni into that cold liquid, is it bishul or not?
If you pour from a Kli Sheni into there, again, if you made it into liquid beforehand, then there's less of an issue. And that is why some people do that. They make tea scents or whatever before Shabbos, which is basically a very concentrated solution of tea. Then they pour hot water from a Kli Sheni into it on Shabbos, and there's no issue because water, not so much because ein bishul achavishul, but because water is not one of those things of kalei habishul. Water is not one of those things where if you pour on it from a Kli Sheni, it gets heated up so easily, it gets cooked so easily. as opposed to if you were to pour directly on the tea bag from a cliché, then there could be an issue. Then to do that, if you want to do that, you would have to use a cliché.
So if you before Shabbos, you liquefy cocoa, and then on Shabbos, you put a keli sheni, it shouldn't be a problem.
Then it should be fine. I mean, again, I'm not a rav. Ask the rav if you want details.
Right, no, I understand.
That seems to be the idea. Okay, anyway, let's continue with it. Okay. So again, the b'chol shaloi bal v'chamin v'lifnei Shabbos. Again, if you have food that was not in hot water before Shabbos, midichin oisei v'chamin v'Shabbos, you are allowed to pour hot water on it on Shabbos. Again, whether we're talking of kli-rishon or kli-sheni is a discussion over here in Tosfos. Chutz min ha-maliach yoshen, except for old salted fish, the kuyas espanin, and kuyas, which is tuna fish, that comes from espanin, from Spain, with those kinds of fish, pouring hot water itself on them is enough to finish cooking them and make them ready to eat. So that would be author. So the point is shmamino. So we can prove from that the same thing as over there. We're saying that pouring hot water on them is still considered bishul and it's author by the same thing with the egg, even though you're not completely cooking it by putting it next to this, by putting it next to the kettle. The fact that you're cooking it a little bit is enough to be considered that it would be also minasara. Okay. So that's that. The fact, even though you're only cooking it a little bit, or even though you're only using tolbit or urim, which is similar to this case of pouring on the fish from a kli-rishon or kli-sheni, nevertheless the same thing would apply. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, v'loyafki ena v'sugarin, we said that you're not allowed to break an egg onto a cloth that was heated up in the sun, whereas Rav Yossi allows it. So the Gemara says, "Vahodichnan." What about we learn later on in the Masechta, so also in the 22nd Perek, "Nosnid tavshel l'seicha bur b'shvil sheyeh shomer." You're allowed on Shabbos to put a pot of food into a hole in the ground in order that it will stay preserved. In other words, the hole is cooler. The inside the hole is cooler than outside it. So therefore, this will help preserve the contents of the pot and prevent it from spoiling. You're allowed to take a bottle full of good water, and put it into baroyim, put it into a mikveh or whatever, a pond of bad water, the shvilshi yitzanu, in order that the good water that's inside the bottle will get cold. You're allowed to do that on Shabbos. And here's the key thing we're mentioning, the third din in that Mishnah, is you're allowed to take a bottle, you're allowed to take a container of water or food or whatever that's cold, and put it in the sun, in order that it'll get warmed up by the sun. So according to that, would we have to say that Mishnah is only according to Rav Yossi and not the Rabbanan? Because the Rabbanan and all Mishnah don't allow you to break an egg into a cloth that was heated up by the sun. So therefore, on the face of it, they wouldn't allow you to put food in the sun to warm up either. And yet the Mishnah is saying over there it's allowed. The answer is Amar Rav Nachman, like this. So Rav Nachman says, Bechama, if you're talking about cooking using the sun itself, the Kulam HaLeitzligi Yishari, then everybody would agree that it's Mutter. Because that's not, Rashi says, it's not derech bishul, it's not the normal way of cooking things by putting them in the sun. And it's not something that you're easily going to confuse with cooking on a fire, because the sun and the fire are two very different things. Therefore, even the Chachamim would allow it. Or on the other hand, if you use something that was heated up, by the fire, for example, the first case of our Mishnah where you have a kettle of water that was heated up by the fire, and now you want to use the heat of that kettle to cook an egg, the kulam, let's make it also. Everybody would agree that's awesome. Tligi the toldos achava. The machlokas of Yosi and the Chachamim is about toldos of the sun. You have something else that was heated up by the sun, namely in the case of our Mishnah, the cloth was heated up by the sun, and now you want to use it to cook the egg. Mar Sovagas Rinan told the Sachama also told us or the Tanakama is saying that you're going to make a Zera, that we're not going to allow you to use the cloth that was heated up by the sun, because you might instead come to use something that was heated up by the fire, which would be author. Omar Sovagas Rinan, whereas Rabbi Yossi says that we're not going to on that. So that explains it. So they would both agree that if you're putting the food directly in the sunlight, it would be mutter. The machlokas is only if you have, for example, a cloth that was heated up by the sun, and now you're cooking stuff and using it. An interesting discussion that the Achronim get into over here, that more contemporary poskim get into over here. What about, for example, let's say, so cooking with electricity, what about, for example, Rav Moshe has a trouble, what about cooking with a microwave? Are you going to say the same thing, that maybe it should be considered, or for that matter, what about in Israel? It's very common. They have a dud shemesh, they have a boiler where the water in the boiler is heated by the sun. Are we saying that that such things would be allowed on Shabbos? So as far as the microwave and other such things, Rav Moshe says no, because Rashi is saying over here, the reason why you're allowed to the sun is because it's not the usual way of cooking, whereas, for example, cooking with a microwave is a very usual way of cooking, so therefore it would be also daraisa. And as far as the boilers, as far as the dud shemesh that they have in Israel, there you actually have some poskim actually do allow it. So some of them would allow you to take water to use hot water on Shabbos, where then new water is going to come into the boiler over there and get heated up by the sun. Some of them say on the basis of Al-Gemara that it would be mutter. Other contemporary poskim say that it would still be also on various grounds. One of them being that those boilers are not usually only. They don't use only the sun, because what do you do on a cloudy day? They also have regular electricity as a backup. And therefore, you never know. You might be taking water out of it, and later on water is going to be coming in, and it's going to be heated up by the electrical element rather than by the sun.
The thing is that for Shabbos, a lot of people put the electric off. They don't want to have enough from the electric,
according to many poskim, then that makes it allowed. If they turn off the electric backup and all they have is the sun, then yeah, many contemporary poskim would actually say such a thing is allowed. Yeah.
One more thing, Rabbi. If we're talking here about having enough directly from the sun, or having enough from a nap from a handkerchief that was cooked up by the sun, I mean, for our simple head, at least my simple head, it's like a cliche, it's less than direct heat from the sun. Like if you're warming something up with the direct sun, it's hotter than warming up something that was in a napkin that was heated up by the sun.
First of all, if anything, it would be a clean rishon, because it would be the equivalent of like a pot that was on fire. So it would be the equivalent of a clean rishon, if anything, and a clean rishon is mevashel.
The sun cooks much stronger than the sun going on a handkerchief, and a handkerchief warming up the egg.
The handkerchief itself was out in the sun, and therefore it would be the equivalent of a pot that was directly on the fire.
Okay.
But it would be tolbas or it would be what we're calling the secondary thing, tolbas hachama, rather. So again, the hachamim are saying even that would be also, and Rav Yossi would allow. Okay. The Mishnah continued, below yachminena b'choil, that you're not allowed to bury an egg in sand or in dust in order to cook it, where the sand or the dust is heated up by the sun. Now the question is, the Gemara asks, the liflig nami Rav Yossi b'ha, Rav Yossi on the face of it should be arguing in this case also, because it should be the same thing as the Tolva Sa'ur that we were just talking about, where he says it's fine. Why is he not arguing? The answer is, Rabba amu zeda shemi yachmin b'remen. Rabba says, Rav Yossi would agree in this case that you can't, because of a zera, that you might come to insulate food using remet, using, as we've learned before, ashes mixed with live coals, where, in other words, if you're allowed to put an egg into the sand on Shabbos, people are going to think that you're allowed to do hatmana on Shabbos using other things similar to that, for example, ashes mixed with coals, and therefore, the Chachamim asked you to do that, in order that people realize that you can't do that for Hatzmona as well. Because the difference is, in other words, sand and dust resemble remets, and therefore there's a reason to make that greater. But let's say, for example, when it comes to a cloth, it's very clear that a cloth is very different than remets, therefore there's no reason to make such a greater. That's Rabba's explanation. Rabbi Yosef says there's a different reason why Rabbi Yosef says that it would be also to bury it in the sand. But Nation Mazes offer Mimakoima because you might end up moving dirt. Rashi explains you might not have enough loose dirt to bury the egg in, and then what you're going to do is you're going to actually dig in the ground to get more loose dirt, and that would be a Malacha of Chorish. Then Tosfos brings a different explanation, which is that's a matter of mukta. Dirt is mukta on Shabbos. So therefore, and Rabbi Yosef would be saying that if you try to put the egg into the dirt on Shabbos, you may end up moving the dirt, and therefore that would be and that would be altar.
Was that something they did in the Mishkan using the dirt or something on Shabbos?
So that's Tosfos's point. That's one reason why Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, because when did they make holes in the ground in the Mishkan? When they needed the actual hole itself, not when they needed dirt. In fact, the case where Choyfer Guma, the Ein Tzarech Ela La'Afara, where a person makes a hole in the ground and he's doing it not so much because he needs the hole, but because he needs the dirt, is one of the classic cases of Malacha She'ein Tzarech Ela Gufa, where we've had before Machloikas of Yehuda and Rav Shimon, whether such a thing is allowed on Shabbos or not. This would be an example of Malacha She'ein Tzarech Ela Gufa. So you actually have Machloikas of Shoenim, whether that's also on Shabbos and Zeraisa or not. But anyway, the point is that's one reason why Tosfos doesn't like Rashi's explanation and says that therefore we have to be talking about that Rav Yossi is rather concerned about mukta, because you're going to be moving the dirt and the dirt is mukta. So the Gemara says my dinah. What is the practical difference between Rabba's reason and Rav Yosef's reason? The answer is ikumenai ofer tichoya. The difference would be, what if you have very loose dirt? So according to Rabba's reason, you still have a problem because it still looks similar to remet, and you're still going to have people who think that you can do atmana, that you can bury a pot of food in remet, which you can't because the chachamim are then concerned that you're going to move the coals around and then try to heat up the food. Whereas according to Rabbi Yosef's reason, that because you may move the dirt, if the dirt is very loose. And say if you have a considerable amount of loose dirt, then there's no problem that you're going to end up moving it and making a hole. Or according to Tosfos, if you have a lot of loose dirt, you don't even need to move any dirt at all. You put the egg down and it sinks into the dirt on its own.
A good difference would be by the ocean, you have very loose sand, whereas in a regular place, a regular garden, it's much harder.
Exactly. So what we're saying is, according to Rabba, there'd still be a problem with it. According to Rav Yosef, there wouldn't be a problem. Okay. The Gemara says, "Nasi." I have a contradiction though. Rav Shimon Gamliel, remember we said in Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, "Megalgalim beitza al gabei gagri seach." You are allowed on Shabbos to soft boil an egg on top of a roof where the roof is hot from the sun. The ein megalgalim beitza al gabei sidri seach, but you're not allowed to do that on wine, which is boiling, where it was heated by the fire. In other words, the roof would be told us a hammer, and the hot plaster would be told us a roof. So Rav Shimon will be able to say the first one's allowed, the second one is not. So Bishlein Alamander Amos Gerushim Yatnim Meremet. So according to Rabba's reason, that the reason you're not allowed to bury in the sand is because of the Zera, because it's similar to Remet. Well, over here, less of the Migzar, then over here there's no reason to make the Zera because you're not burying it in the dirt. You're not burying the egg in the dirt on your roof. You're just putting the egg on top of the roof. Therefore, it's not similar to Atmana at all. So the Shimon Gamliel therefore would say that it's fine. But according to Rav Yosef, who says the reason is because you may move dirt, which again, according to Rashi, you'd be over on an Issur Daraisa, and according to Tosfos, you'd be over on an Issur of Mukta, live there. Shouldn't Rav Shimon Gamliel say that it's also even in that case, because you still have that same consideration that you're going to move dirt? The answer is the Gemara says, standard lest they offer. A regular roof does not have loose dirt on it. Now, you're obviously not going to start digging a hole in your roof in order to bury the egg in it, because that's going to ruin your roof. So therefore, all you're going to do is put it on top. So therefore, Rav Yosef is not concerned about the possibility of moving dirt in that case. The roof is made out of dirt, or the roof is made out of straw or something, but you don't really have loose dirt over there that you're going to bury it in, and you're certainly not going to try to make loose dirt because you don't want to ruin your roof. Okay. Let's try to bring a proof on this question of, again, whether the reason why you're not allowed to bury it in sand is because it's similar to Atmana, or because you're going to move dirt. Let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. We said, Maisa Sha'asu Anshei Tveria, that happened once the people of Tveria came up with an idea. They they put a pipe of cold water running into or through the hot springs of Tveria. And Chachamim told them, you can't do that. Now the Chamei Tveria, the hot springs of Tveria, are not heated up by a fire. They're heated up from the ground, they're heated up by geothermal processes, and still, Rav Yossi apparently agrees that it's usher, because Rav Yossi doesn't mention in the Mishnah that he disagrees with the Chachamim and allows what the people of Tveria did. So, if you say, like Rabbah, that the reason why you can't put the egg into the dirt is because it's similar to Atmana in hot ashes, okay, I knew the Damiel Atmana. There you go. Then this case of the people of Tveria's pipe is similar to Hatmana. According to Rashi, it's not really the same kind of thing because the cold water and the hot water are mixing. According to Tosfos, it is actually literally the same because water is passing in the pipe through the hot water of the Chamei Tveria and not getting mixed with it. So then, okay, you can say it the same way as the Chachamim asked it to the people of Tveria, the same way it's also to bury the egg in the dirt. El Amanda Omar, the nation nazes offer me a koyme, but according to Rav Yosef, who says the reason is because you're going to move dirt from its place and you're going to be over on the Isur Choresh, or you're going to be over on Mukta, my equal amendment, what are you going to say? What does this case of Tveria have anything to do with what we were discussing so far? Again, the case of Tveria, there's no fire involved. There's no fire and there's no tolda of fire. All there is the Chamei Tveria, which are similar to Tolda Tachama in that it's a non-fire source, and yet we're saying that's also according to Rav Yosef. Why? There's no dirt to be moved around involved over here. The answer is Mi Savrat Maisa Tveria Sefer Koi. You think that the story with Tveria is referring to the Sefer about putting an egg in, you know, about putting an egg in the dirt in order to cook it. And you're saying that the story of Tveria is meant to illustrate a din relating to that. No. Aresha Koi, it's actually referring back to earlier in the Mishnah, where Rav Yossi and the Chachamim disagreed about Lo Yatki'en of the Sudrin with Rav Yossi Matir, where the Chachamim had said you're not allowed to crack an egg onto a cloth that was heated up by the sun. Rav Yossi says it's mutter, because again, it's Tov Chachama, and Rav Yossi is saying that that's okay, and the Chachamim are saying it's not okay. So now the Mishnah is continuing that the Chachamim are saying to Rav Yossi that Hamaisa de Anshei Tveria, look at the story of the people of Tveria, which apparently you agree with also. You agree that those Chachamim who told the people of Tveria you can't do that, you would agree that they were right. And in that case, Tolda Chama'u, if the Tolda of the Chama, in other words, we're using Chama in a broader sense, we mean anything that's not fire, it's considered Chama for this purpose. In this case, it's heated up by the Chamei Tveria, which are hot from the hot springs that are the source of them. The Asri Lehu Rabbanan, and still the Chachamim said that you're not allowed to use the water that was heated up, that was heated up on Shabbos. So therefore, in other words, so wouldn't it be all the more so then that if you're going to have a cloth that was heated up in the sun, that you can't use it to fry an egg? So that's the Chachamim saying to Rav Yossi. The Amar Lahu, and Rav Yossi implicitly is answering them. Habu told us Urvu. Actually, no. Your premise is that the Chamei Tveria are not considered a tolda of fire. They actually are considered a tolda of fire. Because how do the hot springs of Tveria, why are they hot in the first place? Because the water in them passes by the entrance of Gehenna, and therefore they get hot from the fire of Gehenna. So therefore, in other words, it's not a regular kind of fire, but it's still considered, at least as far as Hilchos Shabbos, Rav Yossi is going to consider it a fire to the extent that the tolda of it would be awesome in a Torah, like we said before. the Ramban, actually, the Ramban has an interesting discussion about this because, I mean, you know, we usually think of Gehenna as a purely ruchniistic thing, but based on this, they, you know, you have various Gemaras that seem to imply that it's actually a place on earth or under the earth or something. And here you have, for example, we're bringing it in a context of halacha, so we can't say that it's an exaggeration or something. So it must mean that there's a certain reality to it, that there is something on the earth that can be described as Gehenna, and which the Gemara can therefore say that the water passes by Gehenna and gets heated up. Mind you, the Rambam actually, the Rambam in a different place, mentions the concept that it gets heated up by sulfur. Which is, I mean, that's the hot springs are heated up by underground sulfur and other things underground that get hot, and therefore, in other words, the Rambam learns that's why it's considered toldus ha'ur, because it's heated up by underground heat, and he would consider that the equivalent of fire. Okay, so the point is, in other words, that the Mishnah is not telling us anything that has to do with the dinim of hot dirt, whether you're allowed to put an egg in hot dirt. It's going back to the question of whether you're allowed to use toldus hachama, and the Chachamim are saying that not. And you see from the story of Tveria, and Rabbi Yossi is saying that's not toldus hachama, that's actually considered toldus ha'ur. Okay. Going on, Omer of Chista, mi maite sha'osu anshe Tveria va'osu lehu rabbonon, based on the story of what the people of Tveria did with their pipe, and the Chachamim said that it's also to them, we learn from that, Botla Hatmana, the Dover Hamosik Hevel Vasilum of Ojem. Based on this, we learn that you're not allowed to insulate a pot with something that adds heat to the pot, Vasilum of Ojem, even if you did it before Shabbos, because that's in effect what you have over here. The water is getting the water is getting heated up on Shabbos by the hot water that's getting mixed with or passing through. And so we see by the same token that the same thing would apply to Hatzmana. Tosfos and a lot of other Rishonim ask why we need that. We actually have a Mishnah later on in the fourth paragraph that says so explicitly why do we need to learn it from the story of Tveria. So in fact you have an explanation. One of the explanations of Rishonim is in fact that first, you have the story of Tveria, and based on that, we have the generalization in the next perek that you're not allowed to do hachmana with something that adds heat. Tosfos over here discusses a couple of other possibilities. That they were talking about that you're not allowed to do it. He was saying that you're not allowed to have hana from it. Okay. Ula halacha ka'amshe Tveria. However, Ula says the halacha is actually like the people of Tveria. The halacha would actually be, you would be allowed to do something like that and have a pipe of cold water running through hot water to heat it up on Shabbos. So Ula basically, Rishonim explained that Ula would say, like Rabbi Yossi, and not completely like Rabbi Yossi, because on Amud Aleph we said that Rabbi Yossi would agree that what the people of Tveria did was author, but only because he says it's considered Tovis, or only because he says that the heat of the Chametz Tveria comes from the fire of Gehenna, and therefore it's considered a Tovah of fire. Ula has a different understanding. Ula would say that Rabbi Yossi would actually say that it is considered toldus hachama, and according to him, toldus hachama is mutter. And he would say that the chametz tveria, that this case involving tveria, would be mutter. And therefore, Ula says that Ula would say that it would actually be mutter. Amalei Rav Nachman, but Rav Nachman says to Ula, don't think that's mutter. Kvar tavrinu anshe Tveria l'spilenaihu, you should know the people of Tveria already broke that pipe, meaning they stopped using it because they accepted what the Chachamim said. So the halacha is like the Chachamim, that you're not allowed to do such a thing.
So what is it? Is it toldus ha'ur or it's toldus cham?
So the point is, as far as a matter of practical halacha, it doesn't really matter so much. Whether we consider the chametz tveria, whether we consider those chametz tveria to be a tolda of fire, or whether we consider it to be a tolda of the sun or of other or geothermal or whatever, either way, it's also on Shabbat, either daraisa or drabanan, as the case may be.
Yeah, but on what basis?
On the basis of that tolda chama, we said is also daraisa. Toldus ha'ur is also daraisa, like we said about cooking the egg next to the kettle of hot water. Tulis Chama, we said that Rabbanon make Gzeira, and the Halacha is like them against Rav Yehi, and therefore, whether we consider the Chama Tveria to be a Tulis Seura, whether we consider it to be Tulis Chama, either way it would be also. And on top of that, we have what Rav Chisda is saying, that even if you have, the pipe is just passing through, like what Tosfos is saying, nevertheless, it's still a matter of Hatmana, and Hatmana can insulate food before Shabbos. You're not allowed to use anything that increases the heat of what you're putting inside. And here, obviously, the hot water from the Chametz Tveria is increasing the heat. Therefore, it's also. Okay.
And now, so that would apply to any hot springs, not only Tveria.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We're just using Tveria because that's where the story took place. Okay.
Right.
So the Gemara continues. My sister also answered Tveria. We said, we have the story with the people of Tveria with their pipe, and the Chachamim told them that if the water comes, that whatever water is heated up in it on Shabbos, we would be authorized to wash with it or to drink it. So the question is, my rechitza, what do we mean that you're not allowed to wash with it? Ilema rechitza kol gufay, do we mean washing your whole body, bathing your whole body in water? The problem with that is, so what's the implication? It would be also because the water was heated up on Shabbos. Does that imply that if the water was heated up on Erev Shabbos, you would be allowed to bathe in it on Shabbos? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, chamin shehuchmu me'erev Shabbos, water that was heated up Erev Shabbos, l'mocher, the next day, on Shabbos itself, roichas ben pon of yodav v'raglav, you're allowed to wash with that hot water face, hands, and feet, avoloi kogufoi, but you're not allowed to bathe your entire body in such water. We're going to learn tomorrow, Beth Hashem, that the chachamin made of zera, because the Chachamim made a zera that you're not allowed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos because there were bathhouse attendants who were heating up the baths on Shabbos and claiming that it was before Shabbos. It's called zera smechatzoyis. So even if the water was heated up before Shabbos, you're not allowed to bathe your whole body in it on Shabbos. I know you're probably wondering about what about hot mitzvahs. We'll get back to that in a minute. But on Mishnah, when the Chachamim are telling the people of Tveria, you can't use this water for bathing on Shabbos, they obviously can't mean bathing your whole body, because that would be also even if the water was heated up before Shabbos. El upon of Yoga Viraglov. So you're going to have to say, okay, the Chachamim are telling the people of Tveria, this water that was heated up on Shabbos, you can't even use it to wash your face and hands and feet. The problem with that is, Ema Seifa, look at the next part of the Mishnah, where we say the Yom Tov, that the Chachamim tell the people of Tveria, if the water is heated up on Yom Tov, Kechamin Shehuchmu B'Yom Tov, then it has the gene of water that was heated up on Yom Tov, Ba'asurin B'Rechitza U'Matorin B'Shtia, where you're not allowed to wash with it, you're not allowed to, but you're allowed to drink it. The problem with that is, Lema Tanan Stoma to Beit Shammai. Would that mean that we have a Stam Mishnah over here, like the opinion of Beit Shammai? Because we learn in a Mishnah in the Sefer Beitza, Beit Shammai omim lo yochem odem chamin l'raglav of elein ken yu'urin l'shtia. Beit Shammai says that on Yom Tov, where we know on Yom Tov you're allowed to do certain malachas ochel nefesh, Beit Shammai says that you're not allowed to heat up water to wash your feet unless the water is also suitable for drinking. So in other words, not just suitable for drinking, but actually according to Beit Shammai, you would actually have to drink some of the water and then whatever is left, you can use to wash your feet, according to Beit Shammai, because Beit Shammai says that you're only allowed to do malachas directly for eating or drinking, not for other kinds of purposes. Or Beit Hillel Matirin, Beit Hillel says it's mutter because Beit Hillel says that malachas oichel nefesh also includes things that Beit Hillel has a famous concept called mitoich shehutra l'tzorech. Once a certain malacha is allowed for purposes of oichel nefesh, then it's allowed for other related purposes as well. So the Tilo therefore says that you would be actually allowed to heat up the water on Yom Tov and wash your feet with it, even if you didn't actually drink any of the water. The same principle, for example, as the Tilo says that you're allowed to carry on Yom Tov even when you're not carrying food. The only thing is that the Tilo says it has to be something which is shavah l'chol nefesh. The Tilo does agree that you have to have the purpose you're using it for on Yom Tov has to be something that many people commonly do. In those times, many people didn't commonly bathe in hot water regularly. So therefore, that wouldn't be shavah l'chol nefesh. So the Tilo would agree that you can't bathe your whole body in hot water on Yom Tov. but they would say that you're allowed to heat up water on the oven to wash your face and hands and feet. Now, if an Or Mishnah was if an Or Mishnah was saying, if the Chachamim are telling the people, you're not allowed to use this water that was heated up on Yom Tov to wash, if we're going to say it means only that you're not even allowed to use it to wash your face and hands and feet, then it comes out like the Chana. So how does it work? The Mishnah can't be talking about washing your, about bathing your whole body, because then that would be also even if the water on Shabbat, even if the water was heated before Shabbat. And it can't be talking about face, hands, and feet, because then why would it be also to bathe your face, hands, and feet in it on Yom Tov? Only according to the Shammai would that be in. We know the halacha is not like the Shammai. The answer is Omer Ikka Bachananya Lihishtakis Behenko Gofayaskin. What we're talking about in Or Mishnah, we're not talking about bathing in the water. We're talking about taking a shower with it, pouring it over his body. So therefore, the Chachamim are saying that if the water had been heated up before Shabbat, then you have an opinion of a Tana who says you would be allowed to pour it over yourself on Shabbat, not to bathe in it, because of the greatest melchus that we're going to talk about later on, but you would be allowed to pour it over your body, according to some Tanayim, whereas if it was heated on Shabbat, then you can't do that. V'hai Tanahu, and therefore our Mishnah would be according to the following Tana, the Tanya, while you stop if other kogufay ben b'chamin ben b'tzonim, divi Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that you're not allowed to pour hot water on your body, that you're not allowed to pour water on your body, whether hot water or cold water, says Reb Meir. That Reb Meir says that Zeres Mechasoid includes everything. It includes whether you're bathing in the water or whether you're pouring it over yourself, and whether it's hot or whether it's cold. Actually, some of the Rishonim learned that the Chachamim maybe wouldn't have a problem in and of itself with cold water, but the Gemara is going to mention later on that after you take a hot bath, you're supposed to pour cold water over yourself to help refresh your body. So therefore, people see you pouring cold water over yourself on Shabbos, they're going to think that you previously bathed in hot water on Shabbos, which is also, so it would be a matter of monitoring. Anyway, the point is that Reb Meir is saying it's osur, even if the water was heated up before Shabbos. Reb Shimon Matir, Reb Shimon says you're allowed to pour water on yourself on Shabbos, whether it's hot or cold water, as long as it was heated up before Shabbos. Reb Yehuda and Reb Chamin also with sun and mutter. Reb Yehuda takes the middle ground because it's osur with hot water, but it's mutter with cold water. So therefore, our Mishnah, which is saying that implicitly that the Chachamim are saying to the people of Tveria, you can't use this water for washing on Shabbos because it was heated up on Shabbos, implying, but if it had been heated up before Shabbos, it would be fine. That goes according to Reb Shimon, who says that you would be allowed to shower in hot water on Shabbos. Now, continues the Gemara. Amr of Chista machloikas the kli, this whole machloikas about whether you're allowed to wash yourself off, whether you're allowed to shower in hot water, that was where the water was heated up on Erev Shabbos, is only when the water is kli, only when the water is in a cave. Alva bakarka, but if the hot water is in the ground, for example, in a tub that's attached to the ground, divrei hakol mutar, then everybody would agree, says Rav Chista, that you'd be allowed to take that water and pour it over yourself on Shabbos. But the Gemara asks, that can't be. What are you talking about? The whole story with Tveria involved water that was in the ground because the hot springs of Tveria themselves are in the ground, and the pipe that they had passing through there was also in the ground. It's all going into a bathhouse which is attached to the ground. And still the Chachamim said that it's also. Which actually, by the way, you have, before we mentioned, Reb Chista himself said that it's also because of Atmana. But the one explanation is that before we were talking about why it was also to drink, now we're saying why it's also to bathe in. Namely, you're not allowed to bathe in it as a separate issue because of Zeres Merchus. And we're saying even when it's in the ground, that would be also. So rather, what we have to say is, if this was said, this statement of Rav Chista, rather we have to correct it. The other way around, machlokas b'karka, the machlokas of the three tanoim, the mayor of Shimon and Rav Yehuda, is only when the water is in the ground, in a hole in the ground, or in a tub attached to the ground, or whatever, out of a kli, but if the water is in a keli, divrei hakol osur, everybody would agree that it's also to rinse yourself off with it on Shabbos. And that's that, therefore. So if the water was in a keli, then they would all agree that you can't even pour it over yourself on Shabbos. Okay, I mean, we're going to continue. We'll continue tomorrow, that's the Shem, with more on this topic of bathing or rinsing yourself in cold water on Shabbos, what exactly is and isn't allowed. One thing that's worth pointing out in this connection is the question of when the mikvahs are open. Maybe this should help, but that should be very soon. Then we do commonly go to the mikveh on Shabbos, and the mikveh is hot. So what's the deal with that? So in fact, you have quite a bit of discussion among the poskim about that. There's most of the discussion actually among them has to do with a woman traveling on Shabbos. Would she be allowed to tovel in a warm mikvah on Shabbos? So you have poskim that argue that maybe only if she's toveling on the actual night that she needs to tovel, namely her mikvah night came out on Friday night, or her husband was out of town and came on Erev Shabbos, but otherwise she shouldn't be toveling on Shabbos at all. The Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch. On the other hand, there is that concept that as far as a woman's tefillah, she is allowed to tovel on Shabbos, but only if she couldn't have toveled before. For example, her mitzvah night came out on that night. As far as men toveling, there is a bit of discussion on the question. Bechlal, it's worth pointing out, the whole matter of heated mikvahs is only something that came since the time of the Alter Rebbe. Many poskim, many Rishonim and Achronim before the Alter Rebbe dealt with the question, is there a way to heat up a mikvah and make it still kosher for use? And they came up with various ideas, but they shot them all down. The Alter Rebbe came up with a way of accomplishing that a mikvah can be heated up and still be a valid mikvah. It has to do with building a box, which then you fill up with hot water, and the box has certain holes in it, and it's a bit complicated. The Alter Rebbe discusses it at the end of Tosafot Mikvahs in his Shulchan Aruch. It's actually counted as one of the 10 chutzim of the Alter Rebbe that he came up with a way to be able to tovel on a heated mikveh, which is a great advantage when a woman has to tovel. We know a woman has to be careful to tovel. She has to be careful to tovel properly, make sure that no part of her body, make sure that there are as few creases in her body as possible. Back in the days when the water was cold, it was very, very hard to do that. But the Alter Rebbe came up with a method of having a hot mikveh, and that's how we have nowadays hot mikvahs, and it's all based on that. So as far as toveling in a mitzvah, you have achronim, such as the Kohen and the Sanel, who say that the whole issue that we're talking about over here is only as far as bathing or showering in hot water on Shabbos. They learn, he learned, the Kohen and the Sanel and other achronim after him, that the issue was never meant for tevilah. And therefore, it's on the basis of that we have that women are able to tovel in hot water and hot mikvahs on Shabbos, and men are able to tovel in hot mikvahs on Shabbos. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, but it's a shame, but that's the gist of it.
It's close. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
What's the prohibition basis for prohibiting to heat one? I mean, to dip oneself in a hot mikveh. What is it?
So that's the thing. According to the Kohen and the Sanhedrin, there is no problem with dipping in a hot mikveh. The problem would be bathing in a bath or showering in a shower of hot water. And that we're going to deal with in the Gemara tomorrow, that the Chachamim found it necessary to make a gzeira because there were people who were heating up bathhouses on Shabbos and claiming that they had done it before Shabbos.
Because that's purely the Rabbanan.
Purely the Rabbanan we're talking about, yeah. Right. But again, according to the Kohen and the Sanhedrin, it was never meant to apply to tevilah. So again, as far as women toveling on Shabbos, what it says in Shulchan Aruch is, if they're toveling bismana, then they're allowed to tovel in the mikveh. And once the Alter Rebbe came out with the concept of a hot mikveh, then they can tovel in a hot mikveh as well, on the basis of what the Kohen and the Sanhedrin was saying, that the gzeira of hot water was never meant to apply to toveling. And similarly, as far as men, but on the other hand, if she's not toveling with mana, then not. And as far as men, also, there's various achronim, including Rabbi Ram Chaim Noah, and others talk about that there is a heter for men to tovel on Shabbos, even in a hot mitzvah.
Who was the Kohen Nisanel?
The Kohen Nisanel was one of the achronim. He wrote his name was Rabbi Nisanel Vile. He wrote a commentary on the Rosh, and he mentions this concept in the course of it.
He was in Poland?
I think it was in Germany, actually. According to I'm looking up over here, he was a Rosh Hashiva in Prague, and later on he was a Rav of Karlsruhe in Germany.
Uh-huh. When?
He was an important post. He was in the early 1700s. He was nifter in the 1760s.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Shkayach, everyone.